I'm Luis Suseche, and today I'm presenting energy proportional storage using dynamic consolidation. This was a joint collaboration between Akshat Verma from IBM Research India and Ricardo Kohler, Rajo Rangaswamy, and myself from Prodi International University. So let's start by giving an introduction to the problem. So first, we know that current power density of data centers is approximately 100 watt per square feet. And this is increasing at a rate of 15 to 20% per year. From the power consumed by the computing equipment, storage is roughly consuming approximately 10 to 25% of this power. And also, the storage load is usually low, let's say 30%. The power consumed by the storage is still the peak power. If you think about another component, like is the case of the CPU, we know that the CPU is more energy proportional than storage. So this only highlights the problem that we have in the storage. So we need a more proportional storage. And we also know that consolidation is a well-known technique for energy proportionality in virtual servers. Usually, they have the opportunity to increase or decrease the number of servers by one, right? So it's really proportional. So now the question that we want to answer is, can we use a storage virtualization layer to design a practical energy proportional storage system? And, well, the storage virtualization layers has this nice feature where you can divert workloads from one physical volume to another, so we have the opportunity to consolidate this workload. But usually moving logical volumes or data, complete logical volumes from one device to another is prohibitively expensive, right? So we need to solve this. Before going in more detail, I just want to have a word about storage virtualization. This is just a background slide, and the idea is going from top down is that we have I requests coming with as a pair, volume number, and LVA, so these go to a logical volume that after goes through the storage virtualization, it redirects that request to the real location of the data. And we call these physical volumes, where the real data is located. So this is an outline of my talk. First, I will motivate the problem by giving some characteristics of some workloads we found and some features that help us in the design of our system. Then I will present an overview of the design. Then we have our evaluation and results of our prototype. And finally, it will conclude and give future direction. So let's start giving just describing the workloads. So first, these are workloads from production systems. First, we have the mail, which is our department mail server, and this includes all the inboxes of all people in our department. We have the web VM that include one machine with two virtual machines that has a host two web servers, one that is the CS webmail and the other that is the online scores management of the department. And finally, we have the workload homes that is our NFS server that is the home directories of our research group. So this, we took block traces of all these workloads downstream of an active page cache for 3 weeks long. So from these workloads, we have three main observations that we later used for our design. So the first observation is that in these 3 weeks, we found that the active data of the workload was about 1.5 to 6.5% of the total size of the volume. Our second observation is that we have significant difference between the load within each volume or each workload across time. So we can, if we find a low load in one volume, then that means that we can offload some data there and we can serve an additional workload from that volume. And our third observation is about the stability of the working set or the active data, the active data set. So we found that as you increase the amount of time you use to calculate the active data set, we found that most of the working set stays stable. And this leads to the third observation, that is that more than 99% or most of the working set consists of really popular data or recently accessed data. So these three observations leads to take some representative data that we can offload in some other volume, and then we can serve the data from there, right? And moreover, the third observation says that this working set is mostly stable, so we don't have to synchronize or continually moving data all the time. So the details of each of these observations, you can find it in the paper. It's much more data to see. Okay, so let's start with the design. So first, an overview. Again, this is the same figure I showed earlier, but now we have, we named the physical volumes, right? So this is just an example of what SRC map will do, right, in a run. So first, first we will assume that we have some scratch space in each of the physical volume where we can offload or replicate the data. And now SRC map calculate the working set of each of the volumes. Right? So after we calculate some features of the working set that I will explain later, we decide that we have these locations in the scratch space. We decide that we are going to locate these working sets in this manner, right? So we then calculate the short-term workload intensity, and we decide that two volumes are enough to serve all the workloads, right? So then we just spin down this disk and keep two volumes working, so we can save power. So this is the approach in a little bit more detail. First, we sample, so we find the working set of each volume. Then we replicate, so we create multiple working set replicas in various physical volumes, scratch space, as I showed. And finally, we consolidate. So based on the IO workload intensity, we activate only a subset of the physical volumes, and we can serve workloads from the original copy in case we have a miss, so the block that is requested was not part of a working set, or the ideal case, which is we serve from one of the active volumes. So it's important to know that the sample and replica and replication happens only at initialization. So replication, you have to copy data. It's important to just do it in a reduced or not very frequently. While the consolidation, we do it every 8 hours, and it's based on the changes in the IO workload intensity. Okay, so now I will present a list of goals for a practical storage consolidation system. And first, we'll start with a fine-grained proportionality. We want to be able to increase or decrease the number of volumes, active volumes, by one each time we increase or decrease the load, or we see an increase or decrease of the load. Then we have, we want low space overhead. Just copying the whole volume is very impractical. And we want only to copy a representative data of the volume. Then we want reliability. Usually disks have a limit on the number of spin up and downs that could happen. So we don't want to hit that number. So we need to be careful not doing that very frequently. Then we have workload adaptation. So if there is a small shift in the working set, we want to adapt to that so we don't have more misses and unnecessary spin-ups. And finally, we need heterogeneity support, which is volumes could have different number of disks, different type of disks. So we need to take that into account and for instance, keep spinning those disks that have a high power performance ratio. So this is the list of solutions that we found. The first is that in the fine-grained proportionality, we create multiple replicas and increase the flexibility of what disks or volumes we keep running or not. In the low space overhead, we instead of replicating the entire volume, we only get this representative subset, which is the working set, and we replicate only that. Then we have the, in terms of reliability, we use a coarse grain consolidation interval and in the order of hours. So we just spin up and down disks every hour, ideally. And then we have workload adaptation, which update the working set replica with the new data that could in the future lead to misses. And in terms of heterogeneity support, we include the performance power ratio in the replica placement benefit function that we will see later. Okay, so again, this is a workflow. In initialization, we detect the working set of the logical volumes, and then we create the replicas in the scratch space. And every 8 hours, we identify what volumes and replicas to activate for the next 8 hours. So something important is that if we have a significant change in the workload, let's say that we have a new volume we have a significant shift in the working set of any volume, then we need to, again, run the same algorithm as initialization, which is detect working set and create the replicas. So now I will present the algorithms for creating the replicas and also how to identify what volumes and replicas to activate the next 8 hours. Let's start by the algorithms to create the replicas. This is called replica placement. And first I present the replication benefit function that is basically based on working set stability. If we have a volume that is not, the working set is not really stable, probably we don't want to spin down that disk. We need the average loads to be able just to check if that load can be taken by another device. We, as I said, we take into account the power efficiency of the primary of the physical volume. And finally, we take into account the working set size. And this is important because as the working set size increases, we have a higher overhead in terms of synchronization and also replication. Okay, so note that this is just an heuristic, and we could actually add some other variables and use them differently that could actually lead to a better heuristic, right? This is just for a prototype, and it turns out to work quite well. Then we assign a space to each working set based on the priorities that or prioritize based on the benefit function that I just present. And then we update the benefit of creating a new replica, given that a replica was created, right? So it's less beneficial. And we run this algorithm till all the scratch space is full. Now, how to identify what replicas will be on the next 8 hours? First, we calculate the short-term aggregate workload, and we compute the minimum number of disks necessary to serve this aggregate workload. So we then identify in this subset of disk, we identify the replicas to serve the volumes that now are inactive. And if we cannot identify replicas for these inactive volumes, we increase the number of these by one and repeat the algorithm again. So now let's talk about the evaluation. We evaluate with 8 workloads to 8 independent volumes, and the workloads are a mix of web servers and of our CS department, and a file server, SVN, and wiki of our research group. So the configuration of the system consists of H equal 2, that is, we change in the active replica CH every 2 hours, and we set a two-minute disk timeout for those disks that were spin down or are inactive. And we calculate our working sets and replicas based on 3 weeks of workload history. So we use the traces we have. And then we report the results of replaying the next 8 most active hours in the traces. So in order to calculate the short-term workload intensity, we assume an oracle. So we assume an oracle, and we use the traces we have. But note that in practice, you can implement this by previous history and with something, for instance, like exponential averaging of the previous 15 minutes or so. So we need to improve this, and it's part of the future work. Okay, so this is our storage test bed. We have one machine with 8 CLTA ports, one Pentium 4 HD 3 GHz, 1 GB of memory. We play back the traces using BtReply, which is a tool of the Linux block trace suite. We dedicate one power supply for disks connected to the power meter, so we decouple the power consumption of the disk to the rest of the machine. And we use a WhatsApp Pro power meter that is able to measure the power every second and with a resolution of 0.1 watt. This is the first result. So here we have two timelines. The first timeline, the top graph, it shows the timeline of the 8 hours and the power consumption of that. We have two lines. The dashed line is our baseline with all the disks on, while the solid line is our system working. In the bottom graph, we have the number of disks on. In this case, we measure power every second, and we measure the number of disks on every 5 seconds. So, there is a reduction of the power consumption, and there is this peak that you can see, and these are due to read misses. So there was a request of a block that we missed in the calculation of the working set. So basically, what we found here is that the number of disks that were turned off was 4.33, and we were able to save 23.5 watts, or what is the same, 35.5% with respect to the baseline. Now let's see the performance of our system compared to the baseline. So we have here a CDF of the response time measured in milliseconds. As you can see, after 1 millisecond, the baseline demonstrates better performance. And we see that for our system, 8% of requests has a latency greater than 10 milliseconds, and 2% of requests has a latency greater than 100 milliseconds. So one question that you have here, you could have here, is why we have this difference between the SRC map and the baseline. So it turns out that this is due to a synchronization, IOS, that happened at the beginning of each interval. Since we change replicas between each consolidation interval, we need to synchronize the dirty data from the old replica to the new replica. Unfortunately, these IOs, synchronization IOs, get queued in the scheduler, and they will affect the foreground performance, or the performance of the foreground I requests. So to see to check how we would do this in without the synchronization IOs, we did experiments, and as you can see now, we have a better fit, or the SRC map line follows better the baseline that we have. Okay. Okay, so our last experiment. Well, we have much more experiments in the paper. But our last experiment in the presentation, this is just to show the energy proportionality that SRC map is able to get. So this graph is in the y-axis we have the power consumption, while in the x-axis we have the load that we had in the system. And the load we have here is the load factor, is a load that is relative to our assumed maximum load capacity. So, each of the points is the power in a two-hour interval for a 24-hour duration. So, as you can see, there is energy proportionality that we achieve with SOC map. And we have different levels, and these levels is just that we turn on another disk and another disk and so on. So the conclusion is that we are able, or SOC map is able, to achieve close to n levels of energy proportionality for a system with n physical volumes. So now our conclusions. So first we propose and evaluate a storage virtualization solution for energy proportional storage. SRC map establishes the feasibility of an energy proportional storage system. And moreover, we are able to meet all the goals of a practical energy proportional storage. So we were able to have low space overhead by using just a working set. Reliability by having a coarse grain consolidation interval. Workload adaptation by including blocks that generate the readmes in the working set. Heterogeneity support by including that in the replica benefit function. And finally, we were able, as we saw in the last figure, we were able to have a fine-grained energy proportionality. In our future work, first we want to have a model that predicts the IO workload intensity. We need model that estimate the impact of storage consolidation and investigate the presence of workload correlation for better workload intensity estimation, and also to have better consolidation decisions. Then we want to optimize the scheduling of synchronization IOs so we minimize the impact of foreground requests. Well, this ends my talk. This is this is the webpage of the project. You can find more resources, including the traces that we use for the evaluation. And well, now I'm glad to take questions.
Wen Guangwang from Mempo. When you copy the working set from one disk to another, do you allow writes to this working set?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question. Can you repeat?
While you are copying the working set from one disk to another disk, do you allow active writes to this working set, active writes to the data you are copying?
So your question is why I am copying working sets from one volume to another?
When you are copying, do you allow writes to that data?
Oh, yes. So I copy that. And so first, if we have a write to the working set, we just update that. And as I said, if we change a replica, we need to synchronize that dirty blocks to the new replica. But moreover, if we have a write to a block that is not part of a working set, we also offload those writes in a scratch space of the scratch space, as you say. where we lock all those writes.
So if the system crash while you're copying a working set, how do you maintain the consistency?
That's a good question. I think, we are assuming that, I mean, we are using the mapping of the virtualization manager. So I think we can assume that the virtualization manager is capable of keeping that information consistent.
Thank you.
Hi. Sankaran Sivatanu from Georgia Tech. I really don't see any difference between your approach and PA RAID. Did you ever see the work before? It was published 3 years before in FAST.
Right.
So they essentially do the same thing, just the only difference I see is you're doing it at the volume level and they do per disk level for RAID.
Right.
So what are the differences?
Yes. So, first, this is not a RAID solution, right? This is more of a virtualization manager solution. So I think they both require different solutions, I think. This is, right? I think that the target is different.
In what way?
In the first one, if you think about a RAID, this is just a physical volume. In our case, we're working with more than one RAID, if you want, because we have multiple physical volumes. Right?
Sure. So my other question is, why did you assume Oracle policy for future workloads? I mean, you could have considered a simple exponential average, as you told.
True. I agree. I guess our main focus on this work was not really to predict the workload intensity, right? So just to make things simple for us, at least in terms of the our proposal, go with assume that we have this Oracle. So it's mainly just to keep
things okay.
Simple.
Sure. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Bhushan from University of Virginia. The question that I have is, how do you calculate the working set, in a sense, in your case?
And yes.
How do you adapt to dynamic changes in the working set?
Right. So, we calculate the working set first. We assume that everything that was accessed is a working set. So when we said that for 3 week traces, we have a working set of this size, we just include everything that was accessed in the working set. That's what we're doing. So it's a more conservative
Okay. It may work for a department web server or something, but if it's going to be used in a real storage system, I'm not sure if the way that you do it would be useful in a sense. With adapting working sets, it may not be useful just to have a history and just replicate the working set. So can you comment on that?
I didn't get your question.
Yeah, so the question is, how do you adapt to changing working sets? That's the question.
The way we do that is that when we see, we create the replicas of a working set, and we see if we have one request to some block that was not part of the working set, we include that now in the working set, and we copy that to the replica that we're using currently. So then we update our working set. And that's also, when we change replica, we need to move that data with us, right?
Thank you.
Ajay Gulati, VMware. So one of the typical ways storage is provisioned is to handle higher IOPS and not just capacity. So I can imagine that you would have a system with more capacity than what you need, but it is designed to handle the bursts in the workload.
Right.
And in your case, did you do any burst analysis on your traces to see that what burst got chopped off when you moved from more number of disks to smaller number of disks, and how much difference did you see in terms of latency before and after?
No, we didn't that, but it's absolutely, it's a good suggestion. I know that this could have some problems with the burst IOPS, right? So,
okay. Thank you.